Blog Talk Radio.
There's a better world to come and tell you why. There's a better world to come and tell you why. We will feed them on the land, on the sea, and in the sky. There's a better world to come and tell you why.
Good evening, friends.
Better world to come and don't you see? When we'll all be union and we'll all be free. There's a better world to come and don't you see?
Good evening, friends. I want to welcome you to Progressive News Network's Peace Show tonight. With all the talk of the damage and the heartache, with all the talk of the loss, I thought it was very appropriate that we have a show dedicated and focused on peace. For centuries and centuries and centuries, men and women have warred on each other for profits, for land, for resources. And there's always been voices that counseled, maybe there's a wiser course. And friends, the good news is we have just those kind of souls that will be with us tonight. Our guest tonight will be Warren Hoskins, who's been a Quaker his whole life, a man of peace. I've known him for decades as an active peace worker. We also have Ed Wujak, who is a wonderful peace activist and humanitarian. He'll be talking to us about the October 2011 work. And we've got Sandy Davies of PDA, also a worldwide author, who will be giving us his perspective. We'll also be joined by Beverly Wiskow of Military Families Against the War. And then also Jordan Hunt of Food Not Bombs, another important aspect of this time that we're in today. Before we go any further, I do again want to thank you on behalf of my co-producer and myself. That's Mickey Royce of Media Goddess Worldwide. I want to thank her and her sponsorship, and also want to thank Imagineering Productions for its sponsorship as well. If you can, please, if you need media services, either promotion or technical services, please get in touch with either Imagineering Productions or Media Goddess Worldwide. Another announcement I want to make tonight is that Dr. Lynn Ringenberg, who was with us last week on the Environmental Show, wants us to remind you that it's coming up October 6th. Dr. Helen Caldicott, an internationally known and respected advocate on nuclear and environmental hazard, will be speaking in the Tampa area on October 6th. So if you're on the West Coast, or if you're in Central Florida, or even the East Coast, and you want to hear one of the world's premier presenters on nuclear safety, please make sure that you're there. It is a free event. And for further information, you can contact Physicians for Social Responsibility at 813-340-7033. Again, that's Helen Caldicott in Tampa on October 6th, and you can reach Physicians for Social Responsibility at 813-340-7033. It is free and open to the public. And if you have any interest at all in the nuclear issues that surround us, my friends, that surround us, you should attend that free presentation. I think you'll find it very worthwhile. I also want to thank our friends at Oceana, Katie Parrish and the gang, who did a really fantastic presentation yesterday for people who are concerned about ocean safety issues. As you know, there are reports by scientists, there are reports by the press of continued leakage in the Gulf. And curiously enough, the Coast Guard and BP seem to think there's nothing out there. I'm sure that surprises you as much as it surprises me. Now, meanwhile, back to the cause at hand. I want to give you some additional information that I think you should know. Now, of course, as you probably remember, way back at the beginning of the Iraq adventure, America was led to that big invasion by the president at the time, a gentleman named George Bush. Now, of course, there's people that have a variety of opinion about George Bush, and I know you are educated and you have your own opinions, but I wanted to bring you something that I found online. It's called George Bush's Five Big Lies. Now, Bush didn't act on his own, we know that, nor did Colin Powell, nor did Dick Cheney, although they did work at the behest of people. But anyway, here's the five big lies that characterized that invasion. Number one, weapons of mass destruction. Of course, they were never found. And the further we find out, the more we find out that both Britain and America knew in advance that there were no such weapons. We also know that they were offering to please extend the inspectors again, but no, that wasn't on the agenda. The second big lie was that Saddam Hussein was a threat to the United States. In fact, Saddam was a tottering dictator with an antiquated, fractured army of low morale, and with Kurdish enemies in the north, Shiite adversaries in the south, and of course, they'd been at war with Iran, and curiously enough, we'd armed and provided information to both sides, because we're not always the peacemaking nation that we'd like to think we are. Another lie, Saddam Hussein was a threat to his neighbors. In fact, Iraq was surrounded by countries with far superior military forces. Turkey, Iran, and Israel were all capable of obliterating any aggressive move by the Iraqi dictator. And then finally, the liberation of the Iraqi people. There were brutal dictators, as we unfortunately know, all around the world, many supported over the years by operatives in Washington, D.C., whose people need liberation from their leaders. But as we know, this is a pick-and-choose sort of situation. And that's not really a persuasive argument. Chances are it was, in fact, about oil, as was so widely speculated. In fact, the occupation of Iraq by the United States is a magnet for increasing violence, anarchy, and insurrection. Another point I wanted to bring you was in terms of casualties. Now, of course, there's official lists and there's unofficial lists. And some of the official listings, the government provides, the DOD, says that there were 33,143 since 03, but anti-war estimates that at closer to 100,000. Now, of course, as you know, we didn't count Iraqi civilian injuries. We didn't count Iraqi military. We got out of the ground counting game because that was so morally bankrupt. They recognized that while they were back during the Vietnam War days bragging about their body counts, they realized that did, in fact, come back to bite them, so they didn't do that. Of course, now we know that there's more American military people dying by suicide than they are being killed on the battlefield. And I don't know who's happy about that, but it's pretty terrible. Globalsecurity.org lists it at, 3,143. Globalsecurity.org lists it as 4,282 deaths. Now, the DOD, you know, the brain injuries have really, because of the IEDs, have been really wreaking havoc on our soldiers. And DOD calculates that there have been 320,000 with brain injuries. And currently they're saying that in Afghanistan there's been 1,752 deaths there. Also, additional information, I got category information from the DOD. There have been 4,324 male and 110 female military people killed. The ages, 22 to 24, 1,080. 25 to 30, 1,133. 31 to 35, 428. And older than 35, 506. Active military, 3,519. Reserve, 416. and National Guard, 499. When you divide it by the military service, 3245 Army, 1,022 Marines, 102 Navy, 55 Air Force, Coast Guard 1. I'm not gonna get into ethnicities because, of course, they're all Americans. And you know, something that that we often don't think of, those who are not embedded, those individuals who go out into the battlefield to report what's really going on, whether embedded or not embedded. Journalists in 2003 were 14 killed, 2004, 24 killed, 2005, 23 killed, 2006, 32 killed, 2007, 32 killed, 2008, 11 killed, 2009, 4 killed, 2010, 5 killed, and so far in 2011, 4 killed. That puts a total of 149 journalists killed. I'm not going to get into the nationalities of journalists because, of course, they're all human beings. And as our old friend Emma Goldman used to say, a rifle is a tool with a worker at both ends. And I'm going to say the same thing about a cruise missile. A cruise missile is a tool with a worker at both ends, because who is it that they're making the world safer for? It sure isn't you and me. There's a statistic here on the internally displaced persons in Iraq. So here they say that in 2003 there were 400,000 Iraqis displaced. In 2004 they list 800,000 Iraqis displaced. It's a nice way to say driven from their homes. 2005, 1,200,000 Iraqis displaced. Of course, this would be cumulative. 2006, 2 million Iraqis displaced. 2007, 2,740,000 Iraqis displaced. 2008, 2,770,000. 2009, 2,764,000 Iraqis displaced, and 2010, 2,700,000 Iraqis displaced. This was as of March. And while the casualties are going down, they are not stopping. And of course, the number of people who think that Iraq is safe continues to dwindle. I also wanted to bring some other information to bear. There are so many good people who oppose our government's actions in this war. And while it was a wonderful thing that President Obama, when he was running, spoke about bringing the troops home and putting an end to the adventuresome war making that the last president had indulged in to such great destruction, and to change the way we made war, to bring us back into international law. Unfortunately, that has not seemed to be the case. So let us hope that we will soon be turning from that awful thing and building a more peaceful world. Many people feel that since the George Bush administration sent this country to war and asked only of the civilians that they go shopping, that is an unfortunate thing. And trying to have a war off the cuff without raising the money for it was a terrible policy. And of course, now that we find ourselves in such economic straits for a variety of reasons, all those wars on credit certainly has not made things any easier. So many people are advocating that a big improvement in the economy would be because we turned away from all this war making. We've got our first guest here. Let me bring on, I think this is Ed. Ed, is that you?
Yes, it is me. Hello, Rick. How are you this evening?
Very good, my friend. Very good. And a somber evening it is. But those of us who want to work for peace are taking the bit by our teeth and we are going to make this a more peaceful place. Ed, why don't you tell us a little about yourself and how you got involved in this project?
Well, back in the 60s, I was in college, and suddenly I noticed what was going on around me. And at that point, it was Vietnam. And I thought, good grief, what are these people doing? And so that was kind of my intro to politics, let's call it. At that time, I was active in the peace movement. I was doing some draft counseling. I later became involved in the war tax resistance movement. This is all in Minnesota, where I was going to college and where I lived afterwards. And then, of course, as happens to many of us, you get a little older, and suddenly you've got jobs, you've got wives, you've got families, you got to go to work, and life kind of takes over. And so, over the years, I've been, you know, paying attention. I mean, I have not been asleep. But I thought, I used to think, well, I'd like to do that, but I can't do that. I got to work. And I recently reached an age where I'm pretty much retired. So I look and say, hey, I don't have to work. I can start doing some of this political stuff again. And so a few months ago, I came across the action happening in D.C. It's called the October 2011 movement. It is, and so I thought, you know, this, it was all the right people doing all the right things at the right time for the right reasons.
Very important.
So I said, well, I think I'm going to go. So I decided to go, and then I thought, well, I could help out. So I called up and I said, well, you know, here I am. I'm in Florida. I'm committed to this cause. I'm going to come. What kind of help can I be? And they said, oh, goody, you can be our Florida contact. And so I've discovered it's really easy to get jobs if you don't expect to get paid.
Well, luckily, they probably didn't realize just what a person of such great wealth of organizational skills that you have. I mean, how long did you work in the event business, Ed?
Well, I worked in the behind the scenes of the entertainment business for 40 years or so.
A little bit of event experience, it seems to me.
just a bit. So anyway, what I was asked to do was to spread the word in South Florida about this upcoming event, and that's what I've been trying to do. I view it as a tribute to our friends in Latin America. I just go out and beat on pots, you know. So anyway, what the event?
Well, we're glad to be the pot you can beat on tonight.
Okay, on October the 6th is the 10th anniversary of the invasion of Afghanistan. And that's the reason why it was chosen as the day the event begins. And what this is really inspired by the people in Tahrir Square in Egypt, inspired by the people in Madison, Wisconsin, and inspired by a lot of the Arab Spring actions in the Middle East and in North Africa. It's an occupation. It is not a demonstration. The idea is that thousands of people go to Washington, D.C. They go to Freedom Plaza, which is right downtown somewhere. I don't know. I got a map, but I'll find it when I get there. It's close to the White House, close to the Capitol, close to everything. And we have a permit for 4 days worth of whatever we're going to do there. And then we're not going to leave. The idea is that if you go somewhere and you got a lot of people, and you sort of go somewhere and don't leave, eventually someone notices you're there. And so the event has a beginning time, but it does not have an end time, because there are people who are prepared. You know, some people are going to stay for a couple of days. there are people who are prepared to stay for a couple of months. The event is totally committed to nonviolence. There could be some civil disobedience involved. We'll have to see how that works out. But the whole idea is to take a stand against what's going wrong in our country. What we've noticed lately is that there, all the usual stuff, all the usual ways of affecting policy don't work anymore. Have you noticed that whoever you vote for, nothing changes? So what are you going to do? Unless you're wealthy enough to afford a congressman or a senator, and I certainly am not.
Well, I tried to raise money for a down payment on a senator.
Yeah, the trouble is we don't have the money. The other guys have the money. What we have are people, and what we have is a desire to reclaim our country. And actually, we stand with the vast majority. In a word, the enemy is corporatism and militarism, and this manifests itself in many ways. But the American people do not like this. And, you know, polls have shown over and over that the vast majority of people want to end the wars, cut military spending, protect the social safety net, end corporate welfare, move toward a clean energy future, protect worker rights, make the rich and corporations pay their fair share, and get money out of politics. And so this is what we want, but nobody is willing to give it to us. And so the idea is to go to Washington, D.C., and sort of sit down and see what happens. The event is very well organized. There's going to be nonviolence training. There's going to be a stage. There's going to be entertainers. There's going to be a couple of I'm kind of a folk music fan myself, and Tom Nielsen, who's a well-known performer, will be there. And a number of other people. There's going to be educational activities. There's some hookup with the tar sands action, although, I mean, it's a separate action, but we're working together because we're all on the same side.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is kind of what's going on. What I would like people to do is go to the website. It's October 2011.org, it's a wonderful website. It has information, and even beyond information, it has inspiration. There are many thousands of people who have committed to go there, who have committed to be there, and you know, a lot of the more prominent people from the peace and justice movement are behind this. As a matter of fact, two of the Sandy Davies, who's going to be on later,
mm-hmm.
he's with PDA, Progressive Democrats. They are a sponsor of the event. Food
Excellent.
Not Bombs is also a sponsor of the event.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another, more than 100 other organizations, both big and small, who are trying to lend their weight and endorse it and publicize it and push it forward. And so if you want to do something, if all this sounds good to you, first of all, go to the website. You won't be able to help yourself. It's the right people at the right time at the right place. And we've got to start somewhere, folks. So come to D.C. If you can't do that, one idea that people are doing is if you can't go but you got a couple of bucks, help somebody else go. Think of that person as your personal representative. You know, this is a way for, I mean, the problem is always that if you got the time, you don't have the money, and vice versa. So this
Sure.
is a way to get everyone involved. Help spread the word in your communities. And if you have a little money, donate some money. Everything can be done on the website. It's an all-volunteer event. But needless to say, you know, we need some money for porta potties and all that sort of stuff.
And
so,
did you mention that there were carpool hookups available through the website?
Yes. Well, the website has a transportation section, ride board, something like that. And if you go in there and look through to your state, you'll find people who are looking for rides and people who are offering rides. And there's quite a lot of action in Florida. One of the reasons that people haven't, I mean, a lot of times for demonstrations, people organize buses. But the trouble is, since it's an occupation, it doesn't really have an end time. So it's a little hard to do with buses. But there's a lot of people getting there various ways from Florida. And the way to hook up is on the website. Once again, October2011.org is the place to go. And if you have any questions that relate to us locally here in Florida, or if you can help in Florida, if you go to the local contacts tab, you will find my name and contact information. Feel free to call me.
Thank you so much, Ed.
People are calling me every day, and I give them whatever help I can. I direct them to the website, and the whole idea is keep banging on pots and get those people there, and let's improve our country.
Thank you so much, my friend. You have a peaceful day, brother.
Fine. Thanks very much, Rick. Thanks for having me on, and peace to you as well. Bye-bye.
Thank you. And we'd love to have you back again, either before one more time before the event or afterwards to give us a breakdown, okay?
Okay. We'll see. We'll talk about it. Thanks.
Okay. Bye-bye. Thanks, Ed. Bye-bye. Okay, now we've got Sandy Davies, I think. Is this Sandy?
Yeah. Hi, Rick. Yeah.
Hey, Sandy. Welcome, my friend. Welcome. How are you doing tonight?
Well, I'm doing good. I'm, you know, reflecting on the fact that today is the 10th anniversary of September the 11th. And, you know, what took place 10 years ago today was a dreadful, horrific crime. But unfortunately, the leaders of the United States presented it to us, to the public, not as a crime, but as an act of war. And they did that in order to then justify their own acts of war and to portray them as acts of self-defense. You know, there's actually no legal basis for that. Terrorism is a crime. It's not an act of war. And our invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq in response to that was simply crimes of aggression. Neither one was approved by the UN Security Council. And, you know, so that's the legal status of where we stand now. And in the moral reckoning, those wars have now killed roughly about 400 people for every single one of the Americans who died on September the 11th. So this, you know, this is where we stand, and this has been presented to the public as a war on terror or a war on terrorism. Now, according to the U.S. State Department, the number of acts of terrorism in the world in 2001, including the September the 11th attacks, amounted to 348 acts of terrorism. The State Department last year, 2010, and the year before, 2009, each year is now documenting about 11,000 acts of terrorism per year. And so, you know, if this, so our war on terrorism has resulted in about 300 times as many acts of terrorism as there were before. So, you know, if this is a war against terrorism, on terrorism, then, you know, it's pretty clear who's won. Terrorism won. It's terrorism won, United States zero. Now, of course, you know, Americans went to the polls in 2008 and elected a new president, hoping that he would change some of this. Now, there have been some changes. For instance, one of the problems with the war on terrorism was that it involved using the CIA to kidnap people, drug them, load them onto planes, ship them around the world, send them to other countries to be tortured, send them to secret CIA prisons on Diego Garcia and in Thailand and several other places. And you know...
Let's not leave out Mubarak's Egypt and Libya.
Oh, absolutely. Gaddafi's Libya, absolutely. Well, there's a long list of countries that we shipped people to. So, you know, some of your listeners may be wondering, well, how come we're not hearing about that so much under Obama? That seems like maybe he's actually done something good. You know, we're not hearing so much about extraordinary renditions and torture. Unfortunately, there's a couple of things people should understand. Jeremy Scahill wrote an article about a secret CIA prison in the basement of the National Palace in Mogadishu in Somalia. Reprieve, the British human rights organization, has documented people being kidnapped in Kenya and shipped off to that particular black site. But Obama has actually somewhat resolved this problem, because what he's doing instead of having the CIA kidnap people is he's got U.S. special forces now deployed in about 75 countries around the world, compared to 60 when he took office, and their orders are not to capture people and ship them off places to be tortured, but just to kill them. And so that avoids all of the problems.
That
used
to be called
extrajudicial
killing, didn't it?
At Guantanamo. So we have replaced a policy of extraordinary rendition, torture, and indefinite illegal detention with a policy of cold-blooded murder. So I think that's, you know, if people want something to reflect on, you know, the legacy of not so much of the terrorist attacks as of our corrupt leaders' response to it. I you know, that's really where we are 10 years later. And on a more positive note, as we think of peace, perhaps everyone can reflect on the fact that there is really only one country left in the world that goes around attacking and invading other countries. And unfortunately, that's the good news. Most countries in the world have embraced the notion of resolving their differences with each other peacefully. The bad news is that we live in the country, the one country really, that has not. Now, under Obama, he's had a bit more success than Bush did at getting NATO to support some of these operations, and we've obviously Libya has seen Britain and France kind of taking the lead, at least in public. And but of course, that's a long-standing U.S. Goal to get its NATO allies to do this sort of thing.
We noticed we no longer have the embedded journalists. They've dispensed with that entirely, just freezing people out completely. No information whatsoever.
Yeah, there's a very insidious form of secrecy, whereas, you know, you could say that Bush justified the invasion of Iraq based on lies disguised as secrets. You know, they always claimed to know things that they couldn't tell us, and, you know, and that all justified what they were doing. With Obama, it's all just gone further into the shadows. There's a great article, people can look it up online, from the Washington Post from June 2010, about Obama's secret war. You know, this is where they talked about the 75 countries where U.S. special forces are now operating. and as a Pentagon official told the Post, that this administration is getting aggressive much more quickly. This is more or less a quote. He said they're getting aggressive much more quickly, they're talking less, but they're acting more. And this is all behind this image of, you know, our cool, hip celebrity-in-chief who's just so cool and so smart and such a great speaker. And so it's not, the media is not following it. They're following a completely different storyline on who Obama is and what he's doing and what his administration is about, and this is really a disturbing development for U.S. policy, which has been for years just shrouded in secrecy and shrouded in this, the whole sort of image-making machinery of corporate public relations, to have actually gone even further down that road away. Obama actually promised transparency, but of course we've gone completely in the opposite direction, and this is really disturbing. And I think another thing that's really important for all your listeners to understand is that these policies of aggressive war, of, as I say, cold-blooded murder, the $700 billion military budget, which is about 30% higher than at any time during the Cold War, this all has the total support of the ruling class and of corporate America in this country. So there is no pushback on this from any corporate lobbyists. There is no pushback on this from any sector of the U.S. business community. We're not just talking about war profiteers or the military-industrial complex. Starbucks is not lobbying for reductions in the U.S. military budget because
right.
they want to open coffee shops in other countries, and they are just as happy as the rest of the American business community to have that threat of force backing up their investments so that they get favorable treatment from third world governments to do their business.
Well, thank
and
you so much, Sandy.
So where this leaves us, Rick, is that if there's going to be a shift towards peace in this country, in our government's policies, it's up to us. It's up to the people of this country. We need to
Absolutely.
Be bombarding our representatives. Because the only way we can get them to change is by public pressure.
Absolutely.
And so I think it was great to hear Ed talking about October 2011. That's really, this is really the American people, those who are somewhat aware of what's going on, saying enough. It's time to put an end to this thing, and we're not playing games anymore. We're going to Washington, and we're not just going for a weekend. We're going for a permanent, peaceful, nonviolent occupation of Liberty Plaza.
Well,
and
thanks a lot, Sandy.
So much.
I need to bring on my next guest.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Sandy. And we'd love
okay.
to have you back
Thank
again,
you,
okay?
It's nice to be on again, sure. Absolutely.
Okay, buddy. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And now I think we have Jordan.
Yes, hello.
Hello, Jordan. Welcome, sir. Welcome.
Hi there. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to have my friends from Food Not Bombs on. We've had Keith a couple times, and he's a wonderful, wonderful man. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate the work that you're doing. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in Food Not Bombs?
Well, yes, Keith is a wonderful person. I've got to meet him on a few different occasions, and we actually protested for peace, along with other things, at the foot of the White House on 4th of July a couple of years ago, where we baked bread in solar ovens to give out to people. The Food Not Bombs is a wonderful organization. I've been very thankful for my opportunities to be involved. We started our Food Not Bombs chapter in West Palm Beach in March of 2007, and have been giving out food every Saturday ever since then. it started off actually in Orlando through Not Bombs, where I knew the guys up there when I lived in Orlando before. But I was unable to help out too much with my work schedule and such. But that was my first encounter with Food Not Bombs, and that is what led to starting a Food Not Bombs chapter here in West Palm Beach after I moved down to South Florida.
Oh, that's wonderful that you do that.
Yeah, it's great. It's a wonderful experience, and trying to, you know, enliven the lives of, you know, a few people every single week, as well as, you know, try to make a stand for what matters in the world and fight for peace and justice.
Jordan, let me ask you this. If there are people in the area who want to support your work, how can they make donations or volunteer? How can they get in touch with you? Is there you guys have a local Facebook or a local website?
Well, we do have a MySpace page for our local chapter. But you
okay.
can also find our contact information through the main foodnotbombs.net website,
okay.
where you can go in and find your local chapter. And my contact information is on there. So if anyone ever wants to get in touch and try to help out, that would be the easiest way to go. But basically, we, you know, sort of cook at different people's houses and bring food down. It's very simplistic. We are a non-hierarchical organization. It's all volunteer-based, and everybody has a say in decision-making. And so anyone that is interested in helping out is more than welcome to come down and participate on any given Saturday they'd like.
How's the local government interface? Are you getting the same kind of friction that they were getting in Orlando, or is it a more genial interface? Because I know there's been trouble in Fort Lauderdale.
There has been some trouble in Fort Lauderdale and some police harassment trying to prevent what they're doing down there as far as giving out food to the local hungry and homeless. We did have our bout of trouble with the local government. They passed an ordinance a little bit different than what the ordinance is in Orlando that they're fighting, but it was basically banning all food distribution in local parks in the downtown area, making it an arrestable offense to give out food to the homeless, or even if the way that the ordinance was written, you could go down there with a birthday party for your daughter and cut the cake up and give it out to the people that that came, and that would technically be breaking the law. So, yeah, it was very, very ridiculous in a lot of ways. But we ended up filing a lawsuit against the city along with a church organization that was also affected by the ordinance, and the city actually repealed the ordinance and agreed to paying our lawyers' fees and such to the tune of $100,000, literally
wow.
the day before the case would have gone to trial. So we were very lucky. We didn't have any arrests. We were threatened with arrest and such, but no one was actually arrested, and we did not have to actually see it to trial, which I was absolutely confident that if it did go to trial that we would still win, because the ordinance was, you know, very flawed even on its own basic levels, you know. But so since then, we haven't had any real issues dealing with the police or the local government. And in all honesty, that has actually led me to join the board of directors for the Homeless Coalition of Palm Beach County.
Oh,
which
super.
And that position has led me to join the Homeless Advisory Board of the county as an actual official of Palm Beach County, representing the homeless and chairing their policy and legislation committee, trying to make laws that can better improve the lives of the homeless in the community.
Oh, Jordan, that's wonderful. My gosh. You know, we don't hear enough good stories like that where you actually get a chance to participate in some of the decision-making. I don't want to ask you to come up with numbers if you're not prepared, because I know we hadn't had a chance to talk. Could you speak to what kind of homeless numbers are they seeing in Palm Beach area? Just round numbers?
It's hard to give out exact numbers. We are still waiting on the final tallies from the point-in-time count that happens every 2 years, where
uh-huh.
they count the number of homeless as best they can within a 24-hour period of time, which happened back in February. But there is, general round numbers, there is upwards of 5,000-plus individuals dealing with homelessness within the county.
Mm-hmm.
But that number could be quite small. HUD did change the way it deals with the definition of homelessness. And even people doubling up, like staying on a couch at a friend's house, technically qualifies as being homeless. You don't actually have to be living on the streets, but there are certainly a lot of people on the streets. There's a lot of people living in their cars, and even some people living in, you know, abandoned buildings and foreclosed houses and such. Miami has this a wonderful program called Take Back the Land, where they actually are moving homeless individuals into foreclosed houses, changing the locks to where they have their own key, and they have to pay their utilities and keep the place in working order. But it is a way to get particularly families that are homeless off the streets and into some kind of living facility until they can get on their feet otherwise. There isn't a whole lot of that that I know of going on in Palm Beach County, but there are a lot of those sort of situations where people are doing the best they can with whatever resources they have, you know.
Roughly, just generally speaking, how many volunteers do you typically have? I mean, do you do this once a week or once every couple weeks? How often do you feed?
We give out food every Saturday, and we go down to two different parks in the downtown area. The first is the Centennial Fountain on Clematis Street, about 4:30, and then about 5:30 we head up to Curry Park, which is north a mile and a half on Flagler Drive. And there's a lot of homeless people that live or stay in that area. It is generally, we've had about 40 to 50 individuals between the two parks. Sometimes it's less and sometimes it's a lot more. So sometimes it's kind of hard to figure out exactly how much food to bring down for everyone. But there's a lot of need and a lot of people looking for some help any way they can.
Sure, I understand. And you've got a core of maybe, what, 10, 12 people help you?
It really fluctuates. We do have, there's a handful of us that have been keeping it going, but around, like, you know, 6 or 7, 8 people, depending on the week, that come down and help out.
That's
usually
great.
At a couple of different houses, we cook the food and then just sort of bring it down, kind of like potluck style. People just throw themselves. Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. You know, I often try to ask my progressive activists, you know, we're all, you know, most of us who are activists, we had some life before activism, and there's often some event that happens or some experience that brings you from that life of just a citizen to a citizen activist. What was it for you? What took you from the, hey, I'm just trying to get by, leave me alone, to the kind of person that wants to help?
Well,
we all know
those
people. We all know plenty of those.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, and I feel like I lived like that for a while. You know, in my early 20s, I, you know, was a lot different of a person in a lot of ways. I felt a lot of, you know, sort of angst at society, and I felt a lot of, you know, sort of anger at the way things are and all of the problems happening in the world. And I kind of felt like I was powerless to do anything about it. You know, it didn't really matter where I lived because someone else would have that house or apartment, or what job I worked because someone else would be working that job. But along the lines, I realized that if we, you know, choose to start interacting with things and trying to actively make a difference in the world, not only does it, you know, have some very realistic effects in the world around you, but, you know, it really improves your life as well. But at the beginning of it all, it was, I can't say that there was an actual, like, single event that led me to become an activist, per se, but a conglomeration of just all of the things that really irked me about the way the world is versus the way it should be. You know, I mean, all the poverty, the war, the famine, you know, there's so many horrible things going on out there, and it can be very overwhelming and seem like there isn't much that we can do to change any of that. But the more we come together and participate from a community level and help each other out, it doesn't take a whole lot to make the world a better place. You know, I mean, just coming together and doing whatever we can within the spheres that we're in, we can make a huge difference in the lives around us as well as our own lives. And that was what really, you know, led me to just see how far I could go, you know, what one person could do to try to make the world a better place. And that has, you know, opened up doors as I've, you know, gone further along into things. And it's very interesting coming from a perspective a decade ago where I didn't feel like I had much of an effect in the world around me to realizing that there are a lot of things that we can do and a lot of positive things that can come out of just simply trying to do something to improve the lives around us, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, sir, for that that input. And so you say you have a MySpace page, but the best way is to go through to the National Food Not Bombs site?
Yeah, foodnotbombs.net, and our MySpace page is listed on there, but it has our email address, which is foodnotbombswpb@yahoo.com. But if anyone wants to get in touch with us, they can either just email us there or go through the foodnotbombs.net, and you can see my contact information listed there as well.
Let me get that from you one more time. Foodnotbombs.
Yeah. WPB or West Palm Beach.
West Palm Beach, okay. And that's at Yahoo?
Yahoo.com. Yep.
At Yahoo, okay.
And then the
great
main foodnotbombs website is foodnotbombs.net.
Okay. Well, thank you so very much, sir.
You're most welcome. I'd love to help out any way I can, you know?
Well, we appreciate it, and we'd love to have you back again. You have a good day, and keep up the good work, sir. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. You too. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Bye-bye. Okay. Wow, we've had some great guests tonight.
There's a better world to come in. Tell you why. There's a better world to come in.
To our West Coast friends, the good people with the Awake the State are planning an action tomorrow night to coincide in Tampa with the Tea Party debate of CNN. They're urging progressives from the West Coast to come together there at Tampa at the fairgrounds and just rally and show that Florida is not all teabaggers, that there is a strong progressive faction here, and there are far more working people and more progressives than there are hidebound conservatives looking to move this country back to the early 1800s. So if you're on the West Coast and you can get to Tampa tomorrow evening, they are looking for some help out there. Also, I want to mention a wonderful website and webcaster that I've had the good fortune to meet in the last week. The website is called Here Be Monsters. It is a tremendous, tremendous webcast. It is the hour before us on Sunday nights, so it's from 6 to 7 East Coast time. Here Be Monsters. It's run by Gwendolyn, it is marvelous. It is fantastic. It's progressive politics with a nice, strong, healthy dose of positive thinking and spirituality. It's absolutely a marvelous site, and Gwen always has wonderful presenters along with her. She had one of the founders of October 2011. A week or two back, it was a fantastic show. And if you'd like to get some more news and some laughs too, she also has a cosmic show as well. Cosmic Comics, I think it's called. It's wonderful. So make sure you check out Here Be Monsters, her political show, and that's 6 to 7. East Coast time. There's a link to it on our PNN page. So if you're watching this show or listening to this show through New Mercury Media, PNN.html, look for the link Here Be Monsters, and it's on the bottom right side of our page. Also want to mention the good work of our friends Sandy Davies at PDA here in the Miami Broward area. Sandy does wonderful work. He's been at this for a long time, a true peace activist in the best sense of the word, very engaged, very involved. And also my dear friend Ed. Ed, I've known for 30 years, is a great soul, and it's wonderful to see him plugging into this October 2011 event. It's a wonderful event, and it shows that people care very much. I know I've been an activist for a very long time, since the Vietnam War days, since Dr. King's day. And while there are people that poo-poo rallies that think that the day of the protest is behind us, that street corner action is not worth it, and that rallies and speeches are passé, listen, they've been used for a very, very, very long time. And this occupation of D.C., there's another occupation of Wall Street. This is people showing. Now, we can't show them our money. We can show them our minds, our bodies, and let them know that people care very much about what our country's agenda is. And I know that you will help out every way you can. And, of course, food not bombs. If that doesn't say it all, what's important? Food is important. Hungry people, homeless people, that's important. Making another buck off a high interest rate loan, that they blame the victims of these balloon mortgages is just insane. These people were told that, yeah, there'd be a way to make it work. And who cashed those checks? Well, the bankers cashed those checks. And here we have Miss Elizabeth Warren, Professor Elizabeth Warren, comes up with this idea for consumer protection. And we've got the Republicans fighting a tooth and nail. They're even trying to block this stand-in nomination. So make sure your voices are heard. You let the White House know. Let your senator know. While we all may have our opinions about the president's agenda, when he issued that call for jobs, well, I'm sure that many of you, just like me, contacted our senators, contacted our congressmen. Even though we've got basically a Tea Party congressman in my area, I let him know that we stand with the president on this one, that jobs are what we should be focused on, not more cost-cutting savings so that the rich can take home one more layer of gold plating for the limousines. So thank you so much for joining me. I also want to remind you that October 6th in Tampa, Dr. Helen Caldicott, an internationally known advocate of nuclear and environmental hazards, will be speaking in October. Also, make sure you follow up. Make sure you keep aware, because, frankly, you're not going to hear it in the mainstream press, that the danger is ongoing, that the leak continues. And despite what the Coast Guard is saying, there are journalists out there who are checking it out, who are taking pictures. The leak continues. And, in fact, there was a study released in Russia that said that the seafloor of the Gulf has been damaged beyond repair, and that they expect a catastrophic release of oil there. And believe it or not, the thinking over there is that the best thing that could be done would be to blow off a nuclear bomb down there. How that's a good solution, I certainly don't know. But anyway, I want to thank you for joining us tonight. I want to thank you for joining us with these peace workers, Ed Wujak, Sandy Davies, Jordan Hunt. It was tremendous. Thanks for your words about peace. Thanks for your efforts about peace. And we'll see you next week. On behalf of my co-producer and I, Mickey Royce, I'm Rick Spezak, news director of PNN. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next week. Next week is the women's show. We'll be talking to women activists from across Florida. Make sure you're here. Progressive News Network, the good news about the fine work progressives are doing across the state. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Better world is coming, don't you see? When we'll all be union, then we'll all be. Out of marching, out of battling, you can hear the chains rattling. There's a better